meant to illustrate that we live in very interesting times. 96% of the universe is apparently in new forms of matter and energy beyond the standard model. And let me begin by going through the numbers. This is a case that's gotten stronger and stronger over the years. And in some ways, this was first anticipated at a neutrino meeting by George Marx, who suggested that part of the universe could be in neutrinos, and he was correct, but it's even more interesting than he imagined. So let me go through the numbers, which now virtually create an airtight case for an exotic universe. I was going to use the word slam dunk, but I think the meaning of that doesn't work anymore. Stars account for somewhere between 0.5% and 1% of the universe, so 99.5% of it is dark. We have an accounting of the baryons at a simpler time, both at the time of Big Bang nucleosynthesis and from the microwave background, that baryons contribute 4 ±1%. So we have two independent routes that lead to a number of numbers that are consistent. The total matter density, we have several routes to this, WMAP and the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, and using clusters as a fair sample of matter in the universe, tell us that the total matter density is about 30% ± 4%, and you can immediately see a many sigma discrepancy between the two here. A big difference between today and the time when George Marx would have been making a case for exotic matter in the universe is that astronomers now use error bars that are consistent with physicist error bars. So these are meant to be taken seriously. The total matter energy content of the universe, that is the number that determines the shape of the universe, is 1 ±2%. And this evidence comes from the microwave background, largely driven by WMAP. If you look at the difference between these two numbers, between omega and omega matter, this gives us our best determination of what I will spend most of the talk discussing, dark energy, and that's 70 ±4%. So we're led to questions. One question that is largely an astrophysics question is, where are the dark baryons and what form are they in? We believe that they're mostly in hot gas, and this is an astrophysics homework problem. Another question that we're led to is, why are there baryons at all? We will have a talk later this morning about this. We think we have a framework for understanding this, either lepto or baryogenesis. We can are close to answering George Marx's question, that is, how much do neutrinos contribute to the universe? Notice up here I have a typographical error. This is supposed to be, what did I want, 0.00. There's a couple of zeros missing here. This should have been 0.1%. We have a lower limit to what neutrinos contribute from knowing that they have mass, and we have an upper limit that Ofer Lahav will talk about that largely comes from cosmology and astrophysics. So that should be 0.1% to 5%. So neutrinos are but a spice. We'd like to finish up this story. What is the bulk of the matter budget? Again, there's a very large discrepancy between these two numbers. We have a strong case, and I believe Ofer will talk about it, that the bulk of the dark matter moves slowly and is cold. And then I will concentrate most of what I talk about on what is this funny dark energy that's causing the universe to speed up. In terms of talking about what the dark matter is, the story really has not changed for quite a while. The leading candidates are the neutralino. We've heard about the neutralino a lot. The neutrinos, well, we now know that they're just a spice. The axion, we heard about yesterday. So these are the prime suspects. In terms of dark matter, I think the meeting got it right. The action is on the experimental side. And we've heard about direct detection of both axions and neutralinos. We just heard from Joachim about the indirect detection of neutralinos in the halo or that accumulate in the sun. I guess we haven't really heard about the direct production of the dark matter particles at the Tevatron or at the LHC. I think this will be an important part of the story. To finish the story, not only do we have good evidence, say, that the neutralino is making up the dark matter from indirect or direct detection, but we can also produce them. And then a key feature here is finishing the neutrino story and setting the absolute scale of the mass, and we've heard about neutrinoless double beta decay. So conventional wisdom, which is not always correct, would tell us that we're on the home stretch here. However, there are still some surprises possible. There have been papers written about the possibility of MEV dark matter motivated by the 511 line from the galactic center. I think this is a bit of a dark horse possibility. We've heard about narcissistic, it's actually self-interacting dark matter, it's narcissistic authors. We've heard about annihilating dark matter. We've heard about fuzzy dark matter. This was motivated by some problems that cold dark matter had with the prediction of cuspy halos and dark matter lumps that maybe were not seen. I think now the best explanations for these problems involve astrophysics, but we should keep in mind that there could be a surprise here. We see papers written on the supersymmetric partner of the axion, the axino. Papers written on the fact that maybe the dark matter particles are produced by the decay of a heavy particle. Gravitinos are popular, and there is the WIMP-Zilla, super heavy dark matter. Let me move on to dark energy and cosmic acceleration. The story started with a great triumph for the physical sciences. They succeeded in pushing biology off of the cover of Science magazine. However, to do this, a discovery of the magnitude that the universe is speeding up and not slowing down was required. There were two groups that presented data based upon supernovae, the so-called Hubble diagram. Hubble diagram involves the log of the distance versus log of velocity, and one is looking for deviations from a straight line. Let's see, here the redshifts go up to about 1. And you can sort of see from the data of the Hi-Z team, well, it's hard to see. If you blow this up and take out the trend, here are the data. And this solid line is an accelerating universe. This broken line is a very high density universe where omega matter equals 1. That looks ruled out. And here's a low density universe. It was pointed out that perhaps the reason that the high redshift supernovae were fainter was dust. And you would only need about a quarter of magnitude extinction or 25% extinction. And so the evidence, although it came from two separate groups, was perhaps not airtight. Here's the data from the other group, from Saul Perlmutter's group. This plot looks differently because they have a linear redshift scale, but it's the same idea. You have lines here, if you take out the trend, the highest line is an accelerating universe, and the low lines are decelerating universes. At least one of my colleagues was quoted as saying, "This too will pass. Astronomers discover many interesting things." And that's what's great about cosmology, is every week there's a new interesting thing. Well, cosmic acceleration is not going away. The quality of the observations is improving, and the effect is getting larger. Let me just show you the different lines of reasoning that support this. So this is, again, one of these modified Hubble diagrams where the trend is taken out. So this is the log of distance scale, and this is the log of redshift scale. This is a set of 200 supernovae compiled by John Tonry and his collaborators. And the green curve is an accelerating universe. The broken green curves are universes that are not accelerating, that are slowing down. And you can see that the data definitely strongly prefer the accelerating universe. Moreover, this highest redshift supernovae really kills the dust model. I haven't even put it on here, but in a dusty universe, what you'd expect for this highest redshift supernova is, because you're looking through more and more dust, it would be quite faint. the microwave background gave rise to an independent line of reasoning supporting this. This is the WMAP, the best map we have of the microwave background. This is after 1 year's data. Their two-year data set should be coming out soon. Let's see. The evidence here comes from a very different line of reasoning. WMAP tells us that we have the critical density with an error bar of about 2%, that matter is only about a third of that with an error bar of about 4%, and so something is missing. About two-thirds is unaccounted for, and that's exactly what's needed to cause the universe to speed up. So that was an independent line of reasoning that I think was very important. Continuing along, the supernova data has gotten better. This again is a Hubble diagram from the Supernova Cosmology Project, Sol's group, and I want you to look at this since we're in France, the great tradition of the Impressionists, because it's hard to see the points, but you can see that the error bars are smaller, they go out to higher redshift. And if you look at the three different trend lines here, accelerating, slowing down, that as the data get better, the effect gets stronger. A very important piece of evidence, I think, for this story was work done by Adam Riess and his collaborators. We would be dumbfounded if the universe had always been accelerating. If the universe had always been accelerating, we could not understand where the structure in the universe came from. And so Adam used the Hubble Space Telescope to get 16 high redshift supernovae, supernovae with redshifts in excess of about 0.9. And here is the Hubble diagram that he got. So the red points here are the data points. Here's this highest redshift supernovae. The green curve is a universe that at early times was decelerating, so early times is high redshift. At late times was accelerating, so it's a very good fit. Here, this brown curve is a universe that was always accelerating, so it is not a good fit. This other brown line is a universe that was always decelerating. That's not a good fit. So this is evidence that early on the universe was decelerating. Most recently, a group using X-ray measurements of clusters made a Hubble diagram. So very different systematics. The objects you're now putting on the distance redshift scale are rich clusters of galaxies whose distances have been inferred by X-ray measurements. And I believe there were 27 clusters. And here is the Hubble diagram. The upper line is an accelerating universe. The lower line is a decelerating universe. And so a completely different method of measuring distance with very different systematics gives rise to precisely the same result. Even the subtle effects that are supposed to be there are there. In a universe with something like dark energy that accelerates, you should see a correlation between the clustering of galaxies and hot and cold spots on the microwave background. This arises due to something called the late-time Sachs-Wolfe effect, where CMB photons fall in through structures that are forming, and as they fall in, they are blue-shifted, and as they come out, they are red-shifted, and the blue-shift effect is bigger than the red-shift effect, and so it leads to a positive correlation between hot spots and the large-scale structure. And by correlating the WMAP data set with the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, such an effect was seen. This would not by itself have provided the evidence for the discovery of cosmic acceleration, but it's an effect that should be there and was there. Another thing that we have to be careful about in science is discoveries that are too good to be true. And so we have to follow the wisdom of Eddington. No experimental result should be believed until confirmed by theory. And this is always good for a laugh, but it really is an underpinning of modern science. Science is not just a collection of facts, it's understanding. So can we understand how the universe could be accelerating? And of course we can. Within general relativity, the source of gravity is not just mass and energy density, but what sources gravity is mass and energy density plus 3 times the pressure. And so without going to negative mass or negative energy density, one can get repulsive gravity. If you have something whose pressure is very negative, that is something that's very elastic, then this combination of rho plus 3p can be negative. And we have a candidate that almost works. Quantum vacuum energy. One can prove on very general principles that if there's an energy density associated with the virtual particles in the vacuum, there must be a pressure that's equal to minus that energy density. So rho plus 3p is minus 2 rho. It's very repulsive. And of course, I think everyone appreciates that theorists have yet to succeed in computing how much nothing weighs. They've gotten very close to calculating how much nothing weighs. It's a little more than what's needed to cause the universe to accelerate. Just a tad bit more if you take enough logarithms. Okay, so dark energy raises a number of big questions. Why does nothing weigh so little? So that's a good question. Why is the universe accelerating now? And what is the cosmic destiny? So let me just remind you of the why now problem. In America, this is called the Nancy Kerrigan problem. Why me, why now? If you look at the energy density in matter, it decreases with time. This dark energy component, if its vacuum energy remains constant, we know that it must decrease not very rapidly. And you can see that means that that will divide the universe into 2 time periods, one where it's unimportant and it's slowing down, and the other where the dark energy dominates and the universe is speeding up. And that switchover is occurring, well, not really now, but a few billion years ago. So this is an interesting question. Maybe it's just a coincidence. And then there's the issue of the cosmic destiny. This diagram that we all learned on our mother's knee about the universe expanding and slowing down depending on how much matter there is radically changed. Because when you add dark energy, a flat universe, which is the kind of universe that we live in, need not be slowing down. It can be speeding up. And its future destiny depends upon what the dark energy is. If it's just vacuum energy, the universe will continue to accelerate. If the dark energy dissipates, it could go back to the simple story of slowing down. And it's possible that there could be a catastrophe in the future, the universe really speeding up to an infinite density and what's called a big rip, or it could even recollapse. Okay, well, this is the kind of problem that gets theorists excited. Because it's clear that solving this riddle will require a crazy new idea. When you have the really big problems, you know a crazy new idea is required. I should remind everyone that not every crazy idea is a solution to a profound problem. Some crazy ideas are just crazy. So, first of all, there's the issue of how much nothing, quantum nothingness weighs. One has to get that down. One might get it down to zero. If nothing weighs nothing, then you have to find something to accelerate the universe, something else with negative pressure. One idea that's received a lot of attention is the idea that we're going through a period of mini-inflation, that there is some very light scalar field rolling. And if you look at the classical evolution of a scalar field, it can have negative pressure. The energy scale implicated here comes back to the theme of this meeting. The energy scale implicated is roughly that of the neutrino masses. And in fact, Hill, Schramm, and Fry, way back in 1986, constructed such a model where the field that gave neutrinos their mass was also involved in rolling down a hill. It could be that the universe is filled with topological debris that's tangled up. For example, cosmic string is very elastic. A tangled network of cosmic string would produce negative pressure. I think at this early stage in the game, another idea that should be explored, it may not pan out, is the idea that there is no dark energy. That we are just seeing a new aspect of gravity. And if this is so, it's very interesting because one can describe this in one simple sentence. If this is so, then perhaps the new principle is that a property of an empty universe is that it undergoes accelerated expansion. And of course, the universe today, the average density is 29 orders of magnitude less than that of water, or 100 orders of magnitude less than the density at the earliest time we now discuss, which is that time of inflation. So that's a possibility. Let me finish up by talking about how we can learn more about dark energy. First of all, we have to know how to describe it. A simple way of describing it is by the W parameter. W is the ratio of the pressure to the energy density. For vacuum energy, this is -1. For the tangled defects, it's an integer, minus an integer over 3. For the rolling scalar field, it can vary from -1 to +1. If we have a ghostly scalar field, it can be less than -1. If we have new gravitational physics, it can be less than 0 or even imaginary. And this parameter may or may not vary with time. So for example, for vacuum energy, it's -1 and does not vary with time. We know that this dark energy has an important effect on the universe. It determines, in part, the expansion rate of the universe, which I've written expansion rate as a function of z, and it depends upon the dark energy, how much there is, and what its equation of state are. The expansion rate determines distances to objects, for example, supernovae or clusters, and it regulates how fast growth structure grows in the universe. If the universe is really speeding up, it's hard for structure to grow. If the universe is slowing down, it's easier for structure to grow. And this allows for a host of ways to determine W. Here we are currently. The best constraints come from the combination of the microwave background, large-scale structure, supernovae, and Big Bang nucleosynthesis. And we find that W is something like -1 plus or minus 0.2. So consistent with vacuum energy. In the future, I'll just flash this slide up here very briefly. There's a number of different handles that we can use to get at the dark energy. More studies with supernovae, using the weak gravitational lensing technique to watch the evolution of structure, using clusters, either discovered by weak lensing X-rays or the SZ effect, and so on and so forth. It has been predicted by theorists that one using these techniques, or any one of these techniques, might be able to measure W to about 5%, and its derivative with respect to redshift to about 10%. So let me just finish. What's exciting about this new puzzle we're presented with is the number of different connections. So the universe is accelerating, and this appears to be connected to the problem of how much nothing weighs. It may be connected to neutrino mass. It may well be connected to supersymmetry, new gravitational physics, new stuff in the universe, the possibility that this period of inflation is related to an earlier period of inflation. And until we understand cosmic acceleration, we can't understand the cosmic destiny. So let me summarize the dark side of the universe. On the dark matter problem, we may well be on the home stretch. On the dark energy problem, we're apparently at the beginning of a new great adventure. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this very interesting talk. I'm sure there are questions, please.
There's some evidence, perhaps not very solid evidence, for time-varying alpha. But does this have any implications for the models or, for example, the supernova luminosities that are used? Are there other cosmological consequences of this?
The evidence that alpha is varying is at the couple of sigma level. The systematics involved are comparable to the size of the variation, which does not mean that it's wrong. If you just took at face value the variation of alpha and say, could it explain the variation in the supernova brightness, the answer is no. It's a part in 10 to the 5. So the variation of alpha wouldn't give you the variation in supernova brightness necessary to get rid of the expansion of the universe. There are theories where the coupling constants can vary. And they involve rolling scalar fields. I mean, you might speculate that somehow this field is the same field as the dark energy field, or it could be a cousin or a very distant relative. But I think the evidence for time-varying alpha has not grown with time yet, which doesn't mean it's not correct.
Any other questions? Everybody understood everything?
I'm very impressed. Thank you very much.